ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
One of Australia's most recognisable broadcasters is facing the biggest battle of his life. Alan Jones has pleaded not guilty to multiple historical sexual assault charges, and now the case is before the courts.
I'm not going to dwell here on the allegations made about me, other than to say that I refute them entirely.
As witnesses step into the box and the evidence unfolds, the Case Of podcast will be your eyes and ears inside the courtroom. Search the Case Of podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Labor has struck a deal on gambling reforms, with the legislation set to pass Parliament this week. It follows a series of meetings between the Prime Minister and the opposition leader, with negotiated amendments including an opt-out register and restrictions to inducements. Meanwhile, opposition leader Angus Taylor has issued an ultimatum to the Prime Minister: fix the widow's tax, or support for the NDIS is off the table. And it looks like the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, is heeding that warning and trying to fix it. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Karvelis.
And I'm Claudia Long.
And Claudia, what a time to be alive, because the Labor Caucus and the Joint Coalition Party Rooms have met, and in meeting have revealed that they have a deal on gambling reforms. Anthony Albanese and Angus Taylor had their meetings. They've like been thrashing it out. But interestingly, and I'm not terribly surprised by this, but where there's a little bit of backbench shenanigans, at least three coalition MPs have said they're prepared to cross the floor because they think it's not a good enough deal.
Because they're not happy with it. And I think, PK, so one of them is Nationals MP Pat Conaghan. He was actually the deputy chair of the Peter Murphy-led inquiry that really precipitated a lot of this debate and the push for change. And that was the you win some, you lose more inquiry. Now, that might also be quite a familiar phrase, because it's actually at the end of a number of gambling ads now. It's one of the lines that is there that give you also numbers for help. Now, he said, we're being weak by not implementing those reports. And I think, PK, you'd know this too. Like, when you speak to some of the people, particularly those who were present at this inquiry, who were part of it, who followed it, they have very strong feelings about it. Some of the testimony they heard was really disturbing and it was really harrowing. And I think you can see that when people reserve, you know, their right to potentially cross the floor. Now, that, of course, is something in the coalition that they're much more open to than in the Labor Party. If you do that in the Labor Party, you can pretty much, you know, kiss a lot of career progression goodbye, I think it'd be fair to say, PK. But look, other Liberal backbenchers have taken a bit more of an approach, which is like, look, this isn't perfect, but it's a start. And one of them is Simon Kennedy. He's a Liberal backbencher. He says it's a much improved system to what the Prime Minister had initially proposed. Now, Simon Kennedy was one of the critics of this bill. He said it didn't go far enough. He has suggested that the Prime Minister has been forced into what he describes as a humiliating backflip. And Anne Rustin as well, a coalition frontbencher, has said, look, not everybody gets everything they want. Now, what people have gotten in this bill, there are amendments including a single register that's going to allow Australians to opt out of wagering and gambling ads across online platforms. At the moment, that doesn't quite work that way.
So the concept there, you're on a roll, but is that you would sign up to this single register and it would like tell all the places you go that you can't see gambling ads. Is that how it would work?
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. It's sort of like, you know that line in Lord of the Rings, one ring to rule them all? It's one register to rule them all. Because at the moment, you have to sometimes, you know, you might be on a streaming platform and you might have to opt out on that individual streaming platform. And then you might be on another website and you have to opt out on that website. And so this one would just be an overarching one where you go there once, you make that decision, you're not then seeing gambling ads, you know, when you've already said no on one platform. There's also a start time for a 3 ad per hour cap. That's been moved forward to 5 a.m. rather than the previous proposal, which was 6 a.m. So, you know, if you're up early, if you're an early bird, you might notice that one. And also a significant review of this legislation after 3 years, though, PK. So if there's a review in 3 years when this legislation's passed, we're beyond the next election, to say the least. Like, that's a full term of government in Australia. So there's a bit of contention in the ranks about whether that goes far enough. And of course, you know, we were talking about the coalition backbench. There are still people in the Labor Party who will be voting for this legislation who are not entirely happy with it and who see it very much as a starting point, not an end point, particularly when, you know, people that we've spoken to, I mean, I'm not sure about, I don't want to speak for you, Big A, but, you know, hearing from MPs who say this is something that they're hearing from constituents about. It is something that people are interested in.
Oh, for sure. And when people have been affected by it, and a lot of people are affected by it, so it's not some sort of boutique small issue, it motivates people. Having said all that, it's not a vote switcher. That's why the Prime Minister feels like he can get a deal and he probably won't get huge levels of consequence electorally. You know, he didn't at the last election. Don't forget that. He got 94 seats. That's how he sees it. And hadn't acted on Peter Murphy's report at that last election. So we've had a real life test of this not being sort of a first order issue for people in terms of at a general election. Doesn't mean you don't do the right thing or that you don't have to reform things that are not working. So I think the broad view of sort of people in power on both sides is that, you know, you don't get everything you want. I mean, I think Anne Rustin said that. Not everybody gets everything they want. They don't. That's actually the sort of politics of compromise. Interestingly, and you'd expect this, but it's very interesting to watch the positioning of the independents, people like David Pocock, independent Sophie Scamp slammed it as weak and piecemeal, pathetic, a lot of strong language being used, the Greens using very, very strong language, Sarah Hanson-Young out. So they're all trying to taint the bill. And the optics of the coalition crossing the floor, a couple of them, which they say they want to do, will be, I think, a moment. Always crossing the floor is a big deal. Your point about Labor MPs who don't like it but being, you know, just sucking it up is very true. In the Labor Party, it is a huge deal to cross the floor. So, you know, I could be pretty sure you're not going to see any floor crossing.
Yes.
Because it's worse than anything in the way that their culture and rules work. Mm. So that doesn't mean, though, that this is a sort of we're going to skip and we're so happy about it. But if they sit all night, get it done, which I think is likely to happen, it will be introduced to the Senate tomorrow. I think they're probably going to get it done by the end of the week. And Claudia, while I agree with you that it's a big deal to people affected and those who really feel passionate about it, I don't think it'll linger for the government or the opposition. I'm just going to call it. I don't think it will. I think the caravan will move on, and that's exactly the calculation of this deal between Angus Taylor and Anthony Albanese. Just get rid of it. Isn't that right?
Pretty much. Yeah, and I think you're right. The caravan, you know, it's already almost moving on, I think. Once we see this done, I think also it really speaks to this government's philosophy, which is that incremental change is better than none and it lasts longer. And they apply that to so many different things. And it's also something that when, you know, you speak to them about it, they see it as a real point of difference between them and, say, the Greens, who they would say, you know, make perfect the enemy of the good, that it's better to get something rather than nothing, that it's a starting point. You know, the Greens obviously don't agree with that, but that's how a lot of Labor politicians see themselves and see their party and see their government. And I think this also really speaks to that as well. And like you said, you know, they have left the door like a bit more ajar to doing things in the future, but it's not a priority for right now. And of course, you know, we've seen all of this sort of hashed out outside of the big party caucus meetings, because PK, you know, we've spoken about it on this show before, how we get briefings as journalists after those big caucus meetings, and you very rarely, if ever, hear about actual dissent in those meetings, because all of the discussions are happening in these mini caucus meetings for particular issues that are happening, you know, around sitting weeks and things like that, where this debate is actually happening. So we don't hear about it in these briefings, but ultimately it's all kind of landed in this spot where there will be some changes. It's not everything everyone wanted, but there's something.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, yeah, expect it to pass. Expect it, you know, even with the floor crossings, and there might be some theatre that you will see in other news reports, and lots of that will happen. But, you know, the deal's done. Another thing, though, that I think is really interesting is, and I'm going to put this in the category of Angus Taylor trying to make himself more relevant as a political player. That's how I see the next story. So that's the analysis is coming before me explaining the story.
So forward sizzle.
Yeah, it's a bit spicy. So it's another piece of legislation. It's expected to be debated today. It's the so-called widow's tax fix. Now, This amendment is to fix unintended implications from Labor's budget tax changes that essentially punished women who were getting divorced or were widows in terms of their ability to negatively gear, and like the property tax implications of changing the ownership, right? Now, Labor has long conceded that it's a problem and that they would fix it, but they were going to fix it down the track. There's no, I will call it, I don't think there is actually an urgency around fixing it because it doesn't start yet. None of it starts. However, politically, it's potent. Mm. And Angus Taylor has cleverly, I think, because he wanted to get himself in the sort of political space where he's dictating some terms, he has issued the PM with an ultimatum, Claudia. Talk me through how he's tried to do this to, I think, maybe you disagree, but insert himself into this political play.
No, I think you're exactly right. He's tied it to one of the biggest policy issues that faces the government this term, and that's the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And like you said, it puts him at really not necessarily the centre of the debate around the NDIS, but it puts him in the frame, right, on this issue that they want to take charge on to look like a win for them. And it would be a win for them if the government, you know, changed it quicker than they initially planned to. So what he's done is he's told the Prime Minister that if they repeal the, you know, so-called widow's tax, the coalition would then be open to backing Labor's NDIS overhaul, which is a really big job. It's a big bit of legislation. It's a controversial bit of legislation as well, particularly in the disability community. And we're going to, you know, touch on that in a little bit. Now, last week, you know, the opposition tried to suspend standing orders in Parliament to get Labor to bring this bill on immediately. That didn't play out, you know, exactly how they would have liked. But I think it's an interesting one. Like you say, PK, it's in part, at least, about making Angus Taylor more relevant, getting him to the front of people's minds. Because at the moment, to be honest, years out from an election, I think if you went, you know, down the street in Melbourne, Sydney, Perth, really any capital city and said, do you know this man?
Yeah.
Maybe a lot of people probably wouldn't know Angus Taylor.
Yeah, I think that's right. And also it provides, it's a funny one, it kind of provides a win to create some momentum around him too. Like it's, you know, he's clearly going to pass the NDIS changes.
Yeah.
You know, they have long railed the coalition, saying that the NDIS is too expensive, it needs to be reined in. They cannot maintain any political credibility and not support it, right? So he wants to look like he's extracting something for it. And actually, I think, you know, to the government's credit, they haven't had a tanty. They've gone, all right, fine. Right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Okay.
Like they're like, yeah, okay.
Pretty much.
Because they're going to do it anyway. That's why I think it's a little bit of a sort of like almost a fake win, really, because it was going to happen. But sure, they got it earlier.
Yeah,
so
it's a
bit
quicker
of a win.
It is one of those things where it does seem like on all sides, this is very much about how things look rather than necessarily the actual outcome.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting because you mentioned this before too when you were introducing this part of our discussion. This is something that affects women, and I think the timing of this is really interesting from what we've seen this year and also what we saw last week with the Mellons debate. And I know we're not going to go back into that, but, you know, this year we've seen on multiple occasions now, I can think of at least three, where the Prime Minister's female colleagues are coming out and having to defend him and his actions and say, oh, look, the Prime Minister does really care about issues affecting women. He doesn't actually think, you know, that he's not sexist. He does care about violence against women. He does care about this, that, and the other. And I think the timing of this is really interesting to try and get a win on this particular issue when the coalition is so often the one facing questions about whether or not they have a woman problem. And this year, on three occasions, and the ones I'm thinking of, PK, are the way the Prime Minister responded when he was asked earlier this year on Tasmanian radio about a royal commission into violence against women and children. And he copped a lot of heat for how he responded to that.
He was too dismissive, wasn't he? He was trying to be dismissive about royal commissions in his defence.
Yeah.
But because of the topic, the tone was wrong. Yeah?
That's right. Yeah, I would say that's a really fair assessment. And, you know, for him particularly, I mean, he doesn't talk about it very much, but, you know, he has experienced issues around that in his past too. I think it's a really complicated issue. But in terms of his communication on that earlier this year, he copped a lot of flack for how he responded to that question. And his female colleagues were, you know, out in the media saying he does really care about this. This is something we take really seriously. A few weeks ago, we then had the shag, marry, date fiasco with Kylie Minogue and when that was mentioned on the Bush Deep podcast. And once again, we saw the Prime Minister's colleagues defending him, saying that he had been perhaps taken out of context. He also unequivocally apologised for those remarks as well and for the podcast as well. It's important to note, saying that he, you know, may have gotten that wrong, essentially. And then last week, we saw the, you know, melon situation, I'm going to say. And once again, his female colleagues coming out and, you know, saying, look, he does care about women's issues. Like, this podcast isn't what we should be focusing on. But I think it's really interesting timing of all of this widow's tax stuff from the coalition and tying it to the NDIS, putting it much more on the agenda than it otherwise would be. And whether that's playing in some of their thinking, because also we've seen in their own election reviews, PK, that getting women to vote for them is a real problem that they're facing.
Yeah, huge. And so I think that was a very well-argued point, actually, how the framing around this is being managed, because they see a problem emerging and it's women front and centre trying to manage that problem. Look, back to the coalition's relevance deprivation syndrome, which is what I think that is what they're suffering. And I think you've got to call a spade a spade. I think Hanson has been dictating terms. The government's been scrambling to match her and deal with her as the problem for them electorally. And the coalition are the ones out of that proposition. Last week we saw, for instance, Andrew Bragg trying to throw grenades, trying again to enter the attention deficit economy, you know, like trying to be part of the noise because he's trying to flood the zone, trying to get into being noticed. Angus Taylor's trying some things too. So in the last week, he tried to suspend standing orders in a bid to get the PM to apologise to his Japanese counterpart. I think it's the Japanese defence minister's visiting today with our defence minister, Richard Marles. So, you know, the coalition, I bet, is going to ask. I'm just a prediction before question time, but I'm sure they'll be very interested in whether this issue of melons was raised. You know, but I don't know how much more juice there is in the melon.
From that. Yeah.
And then Julian Lisa has tried to suspend standing orders to force the government to extend the Royal Commission into anti-Semitism. Like, this one is sure a stunt, and I want to go to the stunts and what this whole shenanigans is of suspending standing orders. But this actual substance of the Royal Commission into anti-Semitism being longer, that is actually substantive, because there is questions about, you know, reporting by December and then sort of putting a bow around it. Is that enough? Have we heard enough? Are all the right people being questioned? These are, you know, I think it's fair game.
Yeah. And also I remember, PK, when we talked about this, and one of the first things we noted was this, as far as Royal Commissions go, this is a very brief one. And Royal Commissions are normally, and not saying this one isn't, by the way, to be clear, but they're in-depth, long-term investigations into systemic problems. And some of the most high-profile Royal Commissions that we've had in Australia in recent years are ones like the Disability Royal Commission, Aged Care Royal Commission, Child Sexual Abuse Royal Commission, that have gone for years, that have had a really long time to dig into these really entrenched, often complex issues. And anti-Semitism, I think it's pretty fair to say, and I don't think anyone would disagree, is an entrenched problem, and one that would be incredibly hard to dig into in such a short period of time. And so I think you're like, yeah, what you've said about those being a pretty fair question to ask is true.
Yeah. I think this is one of these issues that was extremely big. The Bondi incident, I think, it was seared in our historic memory for a very, you know, and should be for history now, for forever. But as the months have gone on, I think the Royal Commission, you know, we've been trying to cover it, but you can just see that the top line issues, cost of living, all of the other things have dominated more. And I think the coalition's kind of also trying to get more attention on this as well. Like, you know, they feel in the Labor Party, they have got the Royal Commission, but it's got a tight deadline. They don't want it to pour into politics too much or disrupt their political agenda. And the coalition does want it to. Truthfully, they do want it to be a disruptor. And so that's part of the difference you're saying too. Anyway, I want to take you, if I can, to something I know you know quite a lot about, and that is the NDIS legislation, and I said a little earlier it's going to pass, and I think it will pass.
Mm, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean it is, but there are a lot, what are there, like 50 amendments or something? It's wild. Yeah.
And there's heaps of amendments. I'm actually still going through reading a lot of this stuff as well, and it's changing fairly quickly, I would say. I think I completely agree with you, PK. Like, this is going to pass. The Coalition, when, you know, speaking behind closed doors or in private, have said from the, you know, very beginning, of course this is going to pass. Of course we'll pass it. Like, we'll make some changes. There's some people in the Coalition who have very genuine concerns about certain aspects of this bill. And there is no doubt, like, I do not doubt that they absolutely hold those concerns and those are real. At the same time, like you said before, this is something that the Coalition themselves have been arguing for a long time, including when they were in government, that they argued for curbing spending on the NDIS. The other tricky aspect of this, of course, is that this isn't just about politics. There is an entire community of people who are really, really affected by this. And often the conversation around spending on the NDIS is framed around fraud and things like that. And it is incredibly important, of course, to prevent fraud, particularly when it's happening to some of the most vulnerable people in our community. At the same time, this will affect people who are currently on the NDIS. And one of the things that, you know, I hear a lot from the community and also from families of people who are, have disabilities, who are disabled as well, is that they're incredibly afraid of what this would mean for them. There are already stories and incidents of people having funding cut. We've covered them on the ABC. People, for instance, like one man who is deaf who had his interpreting hours cut. And for him, that meant not being able to go to doctor's appointments. It meant not being able to communicate with people. And at the same time, PK, we're also seeing this political argy-bargy between the states and the territories and the federal government over Thriving Kids. And what is Thriving Kids going to look like? Who's going to fund it? When's it going to start? And at the moment, I think that's where a lot of this fear is coming from, right? Because we don't know the answers to those questions, because the state governments, the territory governments, and the federal government don't know the answer to those questions. At the same time, these changes are passing, which will then require things like Thriving Kids to be in existence. And so we just don't know what's going to happen. And for people where their lives rely on these supports, that's a really scary thing to you know, not put too fine a point on it. I'm not sure if you can hear it. I'm knocking on wood there because I'm going to say definitely going to pass.
I can hear you, baby.
There's still going to be a lot of politics around it though, and there's also going to be some, you know, real life anxiety and fallout from this for the people who are on this scheme, who are not just numbers, who, you know, are looking for certainty for themselves or for their children and family members, who are hearing, you know, this real, I think it's fair to say, brinkmanship from a lot of sides of politics and a lot of levels of government about who's going to do what, playing a bit of a game of chicken about, well, you know, we're reaching a bit of a cliff here, guess someone better do something. And the consequence of that is people who are affected by this not knowing what's going to happen, which is, you know, fair to say, pretty frightening, I think.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. But I do suspect it's, yeah, as you say, I think you're knocking on wood isn't even necessary. Like, it's, you know, it's a done deal, but the political fallout continues. It could get very messy, particularly the lack of kind of ready-to-go-ness of the Thriving Kids. Like, it is a genuine problem. And, you know, the Federation at the moment, I've got to say, the states and territories, all of it, it's all in a bit of a hot mess.
Yeah.
It really is.
I agree. That's a good, yeah, hot mess, bit of a bin fire, low-key.
And it's not really about political persuasion so much. It's not like all the sort of the Labor team is Team Red. You know, there's a bit of disagreement on who pays for this and how we deal with this, and it just shows, actually. You do see when there are, like, same-colour governments that the parochialism, which we talked about yesterday with Jacob, really kick in. You know, you think, oh, Labor, they're all the same, but you see the Chris Minns versus Albanese, you see Malinauskas sort of pulling rank on who's going to pay for the gun buyback. Like, you're seeing some
Roger
of this
Cook.
Play out. Yeah, oh, Roger Cook. King of the castle.
Oh, my Lord. And also I think with this too, like you said, PK, this is an issue that is spreading across a number of different major policy portfolios. Health and violence against women come to my mind because those are the rounds that I cover, but particularly when it comes to who's going to actually put money forward for this and follow it through. And there are a lot of question marks around who that's going
to
be.
Yeah, we've got more questions than actual answers on this one, I've got to say.
I'll keep asking questions. You'll keep asking the questions.
Oh, so. Mate, it's the only skill I have, so I better stick to it. That's it for politics now. Thanks for joining me, Claudia.
Thank you for having me.
Tomorrow, David Spears will join me to explain where we're at. Don't know where we'll be at. No idea. Oh, I've got some ideas, but not too many. And if you've got a question, send it to the party room at abc.net.au and Fran and I will try and answer it. See ya.
Bye.